Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Earth Day, the 22nd of April, and we are going to celebrate the day this hour with author Lori Bongiorno, who's the author of Green, Greener, Greenest. It's a practical guide for making eco-smart choices a part of your life. Lori's a journalist who was on the staff of Businessweek magazine for 6 years before becoming a freelance writer. She's written about the environment for The Green Guide and Glamour and many other magazines. And she says that it's easy being greener, although it can be difficult to know where to start. And she certainly didn't know when she first became concerned about the links between the health of her family and that of the environment some 10 years ago. What constitutes an eco-friendly lifestyle? She found that if she wasn't willing or able to make radical self-sacrificing changes, that she may as well not even try. Where would she start? But all of that changed. Her husband had a 2-year battle with melanoma. She had pored through medical studies, tracked down doctors from all over the country to determine the best treatments for him, and then was assigned to a story on chemicals in breast milk and became convinced personal health and the health of the planet are inextricably linked. The book covers so much. You know, it's decoding labels, the meaning of organic. What about fish? What about poultry? Should we be eating those? How do we determine if they are safe? The big news, certainly, the past week or so has been plastic containers and chemicals in plastic. What about when you go to the store? Do you want paper or do you want plastic? Should you use neither? What about water? What about filtration systems? Coffee, tea, personal care products, composting, gardens. So much is covered in this very thorough book that Lori has written. And I know that on Earth Day we'll have a number of phone calls as well. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050. Hello, Lori.
Good morning, Kathleen. It's great to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you with us. You said that this is the book that you wish you had on your bookshelf when you first started searching for answers. Here it is. You've done it.
I've done it. And the reason I say that is because when I first started searching for answers, there was a lot of information, but it was hard to sort of sort through and figure out what would make a difference and what wouldn't. And the reason why I decided to write Green, Greener, Greenest is because I discovered that there's really no one right way to be green, and I wanted to show people the whole spectrum of green options, and the way that I illustrate that in the book is with green suggestions that are easy and inexpensive, and greener suggestions for people who have the interest, the time, or the money to do a little bit more. And greenest suggestions are for those who are willing and able to take something, an issue, to the furthest level. Because I was running into a lot of people who felt guilty about all the things that they couldn't do. And so my goal is to just show people there's no one right way. There's a lot of different levels. We're all starting from different places. And, you know, start from where you are and just go from there instead of feeling like you can't make a difference or, I guess that's pretty much why I wrote it.
And sometimes it's hard to muddle through all the information. Start with the story of fish, because I know that you were searching and searching and searching to find out if it was healthy for your family, if it was not healthy. What about mercury? A friend asked you about fish. You sent a long article. She sent back a note saying, give me a one-pager, please. But
exactly.
How did you decipher all of that?
I did a lot of research, talked to a lot of scientists and environmental advocates. I mean, the thing about fish and seafood is that really the best thing you can do is get a fish guide, because the fish guidelines are changing constantly, and the Environmental Defense has a great fish card. And it also depends, are you interested in sustainability or are you interested only in health? And so you'll eat different fish based on what your interests are, and there are many good cards that will help walk you through it. I was always very concerned about mercury because I'd read a lot about mercury, and I actually didn't feed my family fish for like a year or two because I didn't know what to do. And then I discovered these fish lists, and it made life a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of news in Milwaukee papers the last week concerning plastic and plastic containers. That's in your book as well. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I've been getting emails from friends saying, oh, what you've been saying all along is in the news now.
Yeah.
the big news is that, you know, there are some plastics that are not as good as other plastics. And what we've all been hearing about is that polycarbonate plastic has been leaching or can leach bisphenol A, which is an endocrine disruptor that acts like estrogen in your body. And in animal studies has, you know, shown some adverse health effects. And so what can you do? I mean, just in general with plastic, whether or not it's number seven or any number, is try not to heat things. Don't microwave things in plastics. That's one thing you can do. Another thing you can do is if you're storing hot food that you've just made, let it cool off before you put it into the plastic, because it's actually the heat that causes the chemicals to leach. And, I mean, you know, definitely do not warm those baby bottles in the microwave. Now, one thing you can do for the baby bottles is you could buy tempered glass bottles, or if you're uncomfortable with glass, there are more products on the market that one is called Born Free, and I'm sure there are others that are actually BPA-free. The label will say BPA-free or bisphenol A-free. And the other thing is look at the numbers on the bottom of the bottles. Number seven means all other plastics, and that's where polycarbonate is in. So sometimes you'll see a seven or you'll see a PC next to a seven. Those are the bottles you don't want to use for your baby.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also you consider just the amount of plastic that we use. I keep saying this at least every other day to... Maybe some people have heard me say it more than once, but somebody on the show was telling us a few months ago that there is so much plastic in the ocean that it fits the continent of Africa.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Isn't
and it's
that?
Actually,
it's terrible.
Plastic in the ocean is bad for the animals in the ocean as well.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
They choke on it and it entangles them.
Right. How, guide us through, we're going through this, buy organic, buy local. We don't know exactly what organic is, and I know that the book deals a whole lot with reading labels and determining what indeed is pesticide-free, what indeed is healthiest.
Yeah, it is really, there is so much to navigate with food. I mean, people have written entire books on it, and I spent a lot of time just trying to understand what the labels all meant. They mean different things for different foods, and trying to get a sense of, you know, how to navigate it all. And I do spend a lot of time in the book listing the labels for each food group and trying to decode them for people. And some of them are really meaningful and some of them are not. I mean, the USDA certified organic label is very meaningful, and it means that a third-party certification agency has made sure that standards were followed. But things like, I mean, one of the things people are always saying to me is they read my book and they saw that free range really does it not mean much. It means that for chickens, there's daily access to the outdoors for an undetermined amount of time each time. But that could be as little as 5 minutes.
Mm.
And the claims are not regulated at all for eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a label that I know lots of people are surprised about. I'm trying to think of some other, you know, for chicken and eggs, which you'll get for USDA certified organic, is that they're fed 100% organic vegetarian feed. And that's important because, you know, just like we are with what we eat, you know, the chicken and other animals are what they eat. And some really unappetizing stuff can be in their feed. And in chicken, it could be arsenic or antibiotics or there won't be added hormones in chicken. So if you see a sea chicken that's not labeled no added hormones, it doesn't really mean anything because no chickens can have added hormones.
Hmm. What's the arsenic doing in it?
Arsenic is meant to, I think it's meant, I'm trying to remember exactly what it is. I mean, I think it's partially to help them grow faster.
Hmm.
And it may also try and help prevent disease in some way.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I recall, you have a recommendation that we just not eat it.
Well, I mean, or eat less of it. And one of the people I quote talks about how, you know, we would definitely be exposed to a lot less pollutants if we cut down on the meat that we're eating, and especially if we can cut down on the fat, because that's where a lot of the toxins tend to accumulate.
Mm-hmm. What about other kinds of meat?
Well, you know, there's so many labels when it comes to red meat. Okay, you're seeing grass-fed is one that is, you're going to see the USDA organic label, and that I find it hard to find USDA organic meat. I think it's getting easier, but, you know, I go to a lot of stores and it says organic, and then I say, is it USDA certified? And I say, oh, you know, no, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So that USDA stamp means something. And what it means is that animals must eat 100% organic feed. There's no animal byproducts. They have access to the outdoors, no antibiotics, no added hormones. Grass-fed is a confusing one, and it's one that is changing. If you see the grass-fed label, and it has the USDA process verification label on it, then it's a guarantee that the animal was fed 100% grass their entire lives, with the exception of milk before weaning. They didn't get grain. They had continuous access to pasture during the growing season, and farms have been audited to make sure that this is the case, although mm-hmm. it isn't a guarantee that they don't have antibiotics and synthetic growth hormones. If you see the American Grass-Fed Association seal, then it means that the animals were fed 100% grass diet and they had access to pasture all year round as opposed to just during the growing season. And it is a guarantee that antibiotics and synthetic growth hormones were prohibited. But, if you just see the grass-fed label with no USDA seal or no Grass-Fed Association seal, it doesn't mean anything.
This is really confusing.
It's so confusing, and I actually refer to my book all the time. I can't keep it straight. I have to be honest.
Well, it's good you wrote it then. You needed it on your bookshelf as well as everybody else's bookshelf, right?
And in my purse when I go shopping.
Yeah. So what do you eat at your house?
We go to the farmer's market often, you know, every Saturday from, you know, April through November. We eat a lot of local food. My son has food allergies, so we've always had to eat more meat than I'd like because for a long time he was allergic to dairy. So the only way he could get protein was through chicken and pork because he's also allergic to red meat. So we eat some meat, but I try to, you know, not, now that he can eat more, not make it the centerpiece of our plate. We eat a lot of vegetables, a lot of grains, but I try to go local as much as possible. I know there's a lot of controversy over local right now. There's all kinds of people saying, well, if it's grown a certain way in Australia and, you know, shipped more fuel efficiently than, you know, a diesel truck, then it actually is greener. I buy local not only because of food miles. I buy local because it's fresher. I buy local because in many cases it tastes better. And I like supporting my local economy.
Right. And do you ask questions of all those farmers, is this organic?
You know what, I ask questions a lot, and I remember when I first started writing about these issues, I was talking to a farmer at my local farmer's market, and I was, like, grilling her about what kinds of chemicals she used. And she looked at me, and she said, you know, people are so worried about all the chemicals that they're putting, that you know, on their food and pesticide residues. Do you know that people put more pesticides on their lawns than farmers put on their fields? And I was really astounded. So asking questions at the farmers market, you can really learn a lot too. And I've gotten to know all these people, and it's really fun for my family and I to go on Saturday mornings and say hello to everyone and see what they have that week.
Yeah, and how true that is. What is with this pesticides on fields? These perfect lawns. It seems to me as though that needs to change, and you're seeing some of it change, but I can't tell you how many signs there are in my neighborhood. This could be dangerous to dogs and people, and don't step on the lawn.
Yeah, and how about your kids crawling around on grass? It's
right.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't think people have realized, but I think you're right. I think it's coming more into the consciousness. I think we have to change our definition of what lawn means. If there are some dandelions, is that really going to harm anybody? And also, do we need huge lawns? Can we have smaller lawns and have meadow and other things as well?
Mm-hmm. You have a chapter on gardens, too. A lot of people like gardening, and certainly it is an answer. If we take care of our gardens and try to keep harmful pesticides off that which we grow, there's nothing like growing your own food.
There's nothing like growing your own food. In fact, Michael Pollan in the New York Times Magazine had a big article about that and talking about, you know, people are saying vote or people are saying this, but actually grow some of your own food and you'll make a big difference in so many things. And I actually live in New York City and wish that I could have my own vegetable garden. I joined a community-supported agriculture program, which means that at the beginning of each growing season, I pay a farmer a certain amount of money, and then every Tuesday he comes to the local church near my house with for 4 hours, and he brings everything he grew that week, and I get to pick a certain amount of stuff that I want. But that's the closest I've come, and I wish I could grow more.
Yeah, but that's wonderful to have that, isn't it? That's great.
I love it.
Yeah. What about when you go to the grocery store and it's always, and I know that we should have our own bags and need to figure out where to buy them. Do you want plastic or do you want paper?
Okay, I actually have been taking those plastic liners because I use them as garbage. I mean, those plastic bags, and I use them as garbage liners, so I save money on buying plastic garbage liners.
Oh.
But, the whole paper plastic thing is kind of a funny thing. I mean, it's really sort of six of one, half a dozen of the other. Although there are specific rules. Like, okay, if your paper bag that you have a choice of getting is made from post-consumer recycled paper, then you can't go wrong, especially if you're near a body of water and a plastic bag can end up in the ocean and harm wildlife, and especially if you're going to recycle it at the end of its use. Plastic bags are definitely a better alternative if your paper option is not made from post-consumer recycled content. And if you're going to reuse it, that's great, or if you can find a place to recycle that, that's going to happen more and more. Now, for those of us who reuse our plastic bags, that's great. For those of us who don't, I think that the whole canvas, I have been walking around the streets of New York City, and I am really excited to see all these reusable bags. I mean, I've just noticed it in the past couple of months. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think I've seen more of that now, too. Well, there are certain states that I can't remember. I know California, isn't it?
California.
I don't know if other states have said, we're not using plastic bags anymore.
Well, New York City is making retailers take back plastic bags to recycle them, which is great. You know, so it's not just like whether this choice or that choice is better. It's like, what do you do with that item, you know, whether it's a bag or something else, when you're done with it?
Right.
Do you reuse it? Do you recycle it? Stuff like that.
Right. We're going to take phone calls for our guest. Lori Bongiorno is with us on this Earth Day. She's the author of Green, Greener, Greenest, a practical guide to making eco-smart choices a part of your life. Michael Pollan, who is the author of The Omnivore's Dilemma, says this is an indispensable resource for anyone trying to reduce their environmental impact, comprehensive and convincing, but also sane and realistic. The book looks at it's so many different areas, food, beverages, personal care products, take us in whatever direction is of great interest to you, babies and children, home building and improvement, energy and waste conservation, apparel and furnishings, cleanings, pest control, backyard and garden, transportation, and the three R's, reduce, reuse, and recycle. Here's our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. And if you'd like to send an email, you can do that. That address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. We have three of our lines open right now, so we have two of our lines open right now, so call and take one of them. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go to phone calls. Our guest is Lori Bongiorno. She is the author of Green, Greener, and Greenest, a practical guide to making eco-smart choices a part of your life. And the book covers so much. It's a book that she even references because some of this can be very confusing. Reading labels, trying to figure out what's organic and what we mean by certain kinds of organic and where you should get your food and how do you know that it's doesn't have pesticides on it, and what about labeling of foods, and what about plastics, and, well, the list goes on. We start our calls with James from Stevens Point. Lori, hi, James.
Hi, James.
Hi, Kathleen. I think this is a really great show you're having. I'm glad you had this guest. I think it's a really interesting problem. I wanted to comment that I think this discussion gets frustrating to me sometimes. As a Christian, I guess, because often we don't talk about the reduced part of it, and I think that's part of the Christian ethic, is to live a simple lifestyle in an effort to help other people and to not be caught up in materialism. And so often our discussion about the environment is about how we can buy something different, how we're going to buy a vehicle that's so fuel efficient or build a new home that's so energy efficient, when maybe what we need to consider is how can we buy less things and live a more simple life. That will probably have the greatest impact on the environment. And those things, of course, are challenging to do. We're talking about, you know, taking small steps, which is absolutely necessary in our growth towards a healthier environment. We can't all make a radical leap. And for people's
right.
families, that's certainly harder to do. But I think we need to consider little by little how we can buy mm-hmm. and use fewer
that's
things
a great
and
point.
Reuse
right.
what we have.
Yeah,
it's a really great point. And I actually talk, I mean, because one of the things when I was writing this book, I mean, there's this whole frenzy right now about, like, this green product and that green product. And I really wanted to be thoughtful about not having it all be about buying your way out of the mess that we're in. And consuming less is a huge, huge thing that you could do, and we should all think about it. And there are easy, really easy things that we could do. We could borrow books from the library, renting DVDs, downloading, I mean, also looking at packaging, right? Buying packaging that has been recycled or that can be recycled, or buying products that don't have a lot of packaging. Going to the farmer's market, to bring it back to food for a second, I mean, there's very little packaging in the food that I buy when I go to the farmer's market or when I go to the CSA. But anything you could do to buy less, buy products that are durable. Spend a little extra money on something you love that's durable, that you could spend your money repairing instead of just chucking and buying something new, is a great thing for the environment.
Thanks so much for the call, James. Let's go to Phil from Oshkosh next. Hi, Phil. Hello, Phil.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, Phil.
Yes, the question I have is, I've read a little article one time on BGH and the milk, and I was just curious how that the article I read said something about it could cause an increase of breast cancer in women, and I've never been able to really find anything more on it. Does your guest know anything about that? And I'll take my answer on the radio, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes. I do know about RBGH, okay? It's a hormone that's given to cows to produce milk, and the issue with it is that it contains insulin growth factor, which is called IGF-1 for short. Numerous studies link IGF-1 to breast, prostate, and colon cancer in humans. The only label that guarantees that you're not getting this in your milk is the USDA certified organic label. Now, that said, you know, there are plenty of milk cartons that you'll see that just says RBGH free. And someone I spoke to at the Center for Food Safety seems to think that you can trust producers who are saying this, and so that's a personal call. Organic's the only way you're going to know for sure. And but as more people become opposed to this, I think we're going to be seeing less of it in our milk. I mean, the hormone has been banned in Canada and Europe, and we are all starting to be more aware of it. So hopefully, it's just a matter of time before it's not in any milk. I mean, I don't know how much time. You can't really quote me on that, but. But I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. Leah from Menominee. Hi.
Hello?
Yes, Leah. Hi.
Hi. My main concern is, although I'm very supportive of recycling, I would like to know the negative benefits of recycling as far as air pollution, water pollution, and push towards more of a conscious consumerism choice when you're out shopping. What do you feel about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's three R's are reduce. So obviously, consuming less is your first line of defense. And if you can do that, you're doing a big thing. Reusing is your second line of defense, or whatever you want to call it. And you know, anything you can reuse, you know, give some old paint to your neighbor or products to your neighbor. Anything you can give to someone else or donate. I mean, that's one of the great things about the internet. We've got things like we can sell things on eBay and Craigslist, and there's something called Free Cycle on the internet where we can give things for free and get things for free. And there's all sorts of ways to connect with people, because a lot of people are interested in the stuff that we don't want anymore. And then recycling, I mean, yes, well, it does use energy and all of that. I mean, it's better than making something from scratch. So, you know, if you've reduced all you can, if you've reused all you can, well, then feel good about recycling. And I will say that, like, you know, the number one item found in landfills is paper. I mean, it is much better to make things from recycled paper than it is to use virgin timber. So You know, it's none of the stuff is black and white. We all just have to keep it in perspective, I mean, and make the best choices that we can make.
Yeah. It is amazing. And, of course, our grandmothers and great-grandmothers and grandfathers, but mostly grandmothers in those days, knew about all of these products that were non-toxic for cleaning houses. You have a chapter on that. There are a lot of chemicals in many of these products that we use in our cleaners, aren't there?
There are, and that's one of the first things I decided to change. I learned that my favorite cleaning product that I was spritzing all over my countertops, my kids were putting their fingers on it, putting their fingers in their mouth, was a kidney and liver toxicant that could be absorbed through the skin. So I said, okay, time to make a change, and it's easy to do. I mean, there's so many moderately priced cleaners on the market that are widely available that you can get at the supermarket. And, you know, one of the things that, and so, and every time I talk about this, people are like, do they clean as well? Well, yeah, I mean, they do. And I mean, I found they do. I think it's a bit of trial and error. And it's a bit of, you know, figuring out what your priorities are. Things to look for when considering which products to buy are, look for products that have all the ingredients in the label, on the label. That's a great thing to do. Another thing you should do is look for products that make specific claims, you know, not just like natural or environmentally friendly. What does that even mean? But things that are phosphate-free or buying cleaners that are made from concentrate is actually helpful because you use less detergent and you're sending less plastic to the landfill. But I actually have suggested also in Green, Greener, Greenest, which has, you know, a green suggestion, greener and greenest, one of the, you know, if you want to take something, you want to spend a little more time on something, you could use baking soda. A lot of people use vinegar water with a little bit of liquid soap to clean their windows. You know, olive oil to polish your furniture. Or mix up, you know, make, there are some recipes and you can make your own cleaning products. So there's a whole spectrum of choices for consumers to choose from.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Leah, for your call. One line is open if you'd like to join us. 800-486-8655 is our number. Phil, I believe this is. Phil, hello.
Hello.
Yes, go right ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the program.
Sure.
I think awareness is a big part of keeping our world green, I think. I just have a couple of comments. First of all, in my town, there's a big talk about water runoff and this and that, but I do a system with rain barrels, and nobody seems to know what they are and what they do and what they're for. And, I mean, it's a huge cost savings for yourself if you have any kind of gardening,
mm-hmm.
But nobody's aware of it.
Yeah, that's one of my suggestions in Green, Greener, Greenest, is to actually buy, you know, use a rain barrel with a spigot and collect the rainwater from your storm drain and use that to water your garden. That's a great thing to do, and hopefully people will start considering that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have I only have a real small plot in my backyard, and actually 2 years ago I tilled it up and started inviting some of my daughter's friends and neighborhood children, and we have actually a children's garden.
Oh, that's great.
And so they come, and this year we had gotten a greenhouse, and so we're planting everything from seed, and it's amazing. I mean, the kids love it, and they're really hooked on it.
Hmm. It's such a great way to get kids connected to nature and to care about the environment is to garden with them.
Yes, yes, and they're very interested. I mean, knowledge is... They just eat it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know what my kids have been doing? They've been taking the extra water from their glasses that they don't drink, and they've been pouring it into the garden. We have a tiny garden in our backyard. They've been pouring it to water the plants.
Great.
And having fun thinking that they're making a huge contribution doing that.
Sure.
It's a great mindset.
Yeah.
Thank you, Phil. You also have a part of the book where you talk about, because people use pesticides on their backyard gardens, too, of... There's a whole science to what plants you should plant next to each other that will keep certain pests from getting at your plants.
Yes. There are many, many things that you can do. And in Green, Greener, Greenest, I say, here are a bunch of ideas, and I lead you to all sorts of resources to really learn the details, because it can be pretty complicated. But there are many more options these days. There's low-water plants, and there's native plants, and all sorts of things.
We go next to Mabel from St. Croix County. Hi, Mabel.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi, Mabel.
I have a couple things to mention. One thing is about hanging clothes outside. Up here, we finally had a couple of nice days, So this morning I'm hanging my wash outside. I think it's really sad that a lot of the big cities, housing developments, they won't let people put a clothesline out behind their house.
I agree with you on that. I have to say, my kitchen chairs double as dryers. I am often hanging T-shirts and stuff on the chairs, and I do one of these days need to buy a drying rack, and that's something that some of us who live in cities can do, is go and buy a drying rack. They're pretty inexpensive and a great way to dry clothes. Another thing that you could do to really save energy when you're doing your laundry is to wash your clothes in cold water. 90% of the energy used to wash your clothes goes towards heating the water.
I also have a drying rack that I use in the house in the winter. Sometimes
uh-huh.
I hang things in the bathroom also.
Yes, so do I.
And
my family
else about
getting
the
mad.
Bags. I've been taking I have a couple of canvas grocery bags that I've been taking to the store for, I imagine, 10 years.
Mm.
And I wash them every once in a while. Now, they're made out of cotton. So I went and bought one of these bags at a local store, actually in Eau Claire. And I looked at it. It's this Earthwise Bag Company, but it's made out of 100% nonwoven polypropylene. So I also heard someplace that these bags will not are not biodegradable.
Mm.
They have sort of a shiny surface, and I'm sure it would save a lot of a lot of plastic bags. I also need a plastic bag, like you said, once in a while, to put in my waste basket.
Yeah.
But they look carefully at those, and I wish they would have made them out of cotton so they could be washed and, would have been nice. Also, this morning, I cut out of the St. Paul Pioneer Press a recipe for all-purpose cleaner.
Oh, excellent. What was the recipe?
You take a spray bottle, and you put in a half a cup of vinegar.
Uh-huh.
2 teaspoons of baking soda,
uh-huh.
half a cup of lemon juice, and then as much hot water as you need, and you use that for cleaning.
Hmm.
Yeah,
you can also use it in the tubs and the showers and stuff.
And you can use baking soda on itself to just scrub your sink, too.
That's right. Okay.
All right, Mabel.
I've been in this recycling thing for so many years.
I can tell.
It's annoying.
It's great.
So many people don't. Okay.
Thank you. Thanks for your call. 800-486-8655 is our number. And we go next to Pete from La Crosse. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Pete. And to your guests. I have three terms here written down that are commonly used in the food industry, and they have no meaning whatsoever. And I'm looking for your guest comment on organic fish, organic honey, and, as you said before, natural. What does it mean? As far as I understand, it has no meaning whatsoever other than what the manufacturer wishes to say it means. So I'm looking for your comments on those.
Okay, great. I mean, natural, yeah. Natural really doesn't mean anything. I mean, in some food categories, it has like a very bare bones meaning that, I'm just trying to actually look this up because for different, natural for chicken, for example, means minimally processed, no artificial flavoring or coloring, which is not what you think, right? And it's really misleading because there are minimum standards for all poultry. So, by that definition, all poultry is natural. In terms of honey, I have to say I don't know anything about that. Organic fish, there is no USDA certification for organic fish right now. So there are some overseas certifications, but the standards are sometimes based on livestock, which are completely different different issues than we have for fish. Last time I talked to the USDA people, they were contemplating standards, but it's very complicated. And as far as I know, we're not very near to having a USDA certification for fish.
So for now, we can say those terms have no meaning other than they look nice on the package.
Well, except for honey. I don't know about honey.
Well, bees are free range. It'd be a little hard to confine them to organic inputs.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's also the same issue for a lot of fish as well.
Exactly. Okay, thank you much.
Thanks.
Thanks
for the call. Amy is next from Ladysmith. Hi, Amy.
Hi. I just wanted to comment. About a month ago, I was on the Internet looking for... actually, my food dehydrator had conked out on me and was kind of looking for, in my area, a want ad or something, and I found something called freecycle.com.
Yes.
And I signed on and became a member for my county, Lady Smith's in Rusk County, and was amazed at how fast, within 24 hours, I was able to give something to someone that they needed and vice versa. And it's just been that way for the last month. Actually, today, a woman who works with very poor families, young couples, teaching them how to cook and raise a family and garden and stuff like that. And I was able to give them a lot of small appliances that have never even been out of boxes from whatever reason, families, you know, my mom or something giving them to me. And I think it's great because, you know, we don't have to throw them in the landfill.
Yep.
And someone needs something, and, you know, it's no cost. You don't buy anything. You don't sell anything.
It's
just
great.
You recycle and reuse and keep it out. Make sure that next time you want to get rid of it, you do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I said, I found it on accidents, you know, freecycle.com.
It's a great program. Did you mention that?
Yes, I did.
You did earlier, didn't you, Lori?
Yes.
Yeah, it should happen everywhere. It's a great idea.
Well, yeah, it's a national thing, but you can join up. You can sign up for your community one.
Mm-hmm.
So you go online and you type in your zip code or click on the map. I can't remember, and you have a connection with people in your local area.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you very much. We go to Julie from Oconomowoc, or no, from Ogdensburg. Sorry. Hi, Julie.
Hi.
Hi.
I have an idea for you talking about grocery bags and such. Old pillowcases are just the right size. You can just shove them under the seat in the car and go in a store, and you've got a take-home, reusable, washable grocery bag.
That's a great idea. What about hand? How do you carry that?
Well, I admit I sort of slid a slot for your hand on the side. So you can grab
idea.
It like that.
Oh, yeah, you can just cut a slot on the side.
Yeah. And once it's ripped up, you can throw it in the garbage.
You can cut it up and use it as a rag to clean with.
Yeah. I was going to say the matching sheets are good tarps for when you paint in that kind of way.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Reuse.
Well, that's a really good idea. I've never seen anybody bring an old pillowcase.
Yeah, I like
for their
that. I'm going to try
it. I am too.
Try it once.
All right. Thanks, Julie.
We're starting a new trend here in New York City.
Right. They don't call us the Ideas Network for nothing, huh? We're going to pause for just a moment and return and take more phone calls. Happy Earth Day to you. We're celebrating the day with Lori Bongiorno. She is the author of Green, Greener, Greenest, a practical guide to making eco-smart choices a part of your life. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. For those of us who follow politics pretty regularly, today is a very big day for primaries, the Pennsylvania primary. And tonight, we invite you to join us for special election coverage of the Pennsylvania primaries. NPR's Robert Siegel, Melissa Block will be hosting. It's a one-hour special, and it covers the results from Pennsylvania, a lot of analysis, and we'll look ahead to North Carolina and Indiana, who will be holding their primaries in 2 weeks. And then you'll hear more analysis tomorrow, 7 o'clock hour with Joy Cardine. At 9 o'clock, Sandra Van Oker will be with us on our show, and Wednesday afternoon with Ben Marins at 4 o'clock. So all of that analysis tomorrow and a special coverage tonight at 8 o'clock here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls now, and we go to Rebecca from Amaro. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi there.
Hi.
Well, I had a question based on the cleaners. I recently found an article in Mother Earth News and started making our own household cleaners. But my question is, I don't know what to do with all the other stuff, the chemicals.
All the other stuff that you had beforehand, you mean?
What's that?
Wait, you don't know what to do with what? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Oh, I don't know what to do with all the chemical-based cleaners that we had before.
Well,
like,
see if you can donate them to somebody would use them. That would be the best thing that you can do.
Okay.
And if that's not an option, then what you could do is you can go to earth911.org and type in your zip code and look for where you would have a household hazardous waste drop-off, and bring your products there.
What was that again, Earth?
Earth911.org. Excellent resource for anyone trying to figure out how to recycle things or dispose of things. You know, you've tried FreeCycle, you've tried eBay, you tried all your options. You have to dispose of something. Go to Earth911, find your nearest recycling
centers where you could dispose of household hazardous waste, which okay. is, you know, batteries and pesticides and all mm-hmm. sorts of things. Although, incidentally, recently I was just at Whole Foods and I noticed that they now have bins for you to recycle your batteries. And I've had people asking me for years, what do I do with my old batteries? So I don't know if that's all Whole Foods stores, but at least the one at New York City's Union Square now takes them. I bet other stores do as well.
Yes, I'm sure.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much. We go next to Matt from Middleton. Hi, Matt.
Good morning.
Hello.
My comment is basically regarding organic foods, and mm-hmm. I like the idea, but I find that in a majority of the grocery stores that are selling organic foods, they have been shipped in some 5,000-7,000 miles, mm-hmm. and to me, buying a product like that, even though it's organic, seems counterproductive because of all of the fuel and energy that went in to get the product from 5,000 miles away. When a lot of times there are local products that are grown primarily organically that, again, maybe shipped halfway across the country the other way. And it would be nice to see local grocery stores, even the bigger chains, working with cooperatives locally, like Whole Foods, though, like Whole Foods does,
mm-hmm.
But being able to bring in local products. You know, apples, honey. Wisconsin is a very large honey producer. Again, maple syrup. You know, if you look through a lot of the majority of the larger grocery stores, there's only one or two brands from Wisconsin, and a lot of them from Canada, other parts of the country, when maple syrup is another large product that's made in Wisconsin. And one other thing I would like to see is the grocery stores work as a cooperative for the local beef producers. I have two uncles that are farmers that produce beef. And if they get four people who are willing to buy a cow, they'll raise them without any hormones, without any other type of growth enhancers. They'll charge a little bit more, but the overall cost, once the animal is butchered, winds up being much lower. The cost to transport it is much lower. And I just think that there's not a network. You know, there's got to be a way for the local stores to make a little bit of money out of this. Say, you know, come in, sign up. You know, if you want a quarter of beef, you know, it'll be ready for you in 1 year or 6 months, or if you're working with a cooperative, shorter time.
That's a great idea. And you bring up the thing about price. And people say to me, oh, well, organic meat's a little more expensive or whatever. And I say, well, eat a little less meat and buy quality, not quantity. And there are some people I know who are doing this in New York who have who have connections to farmers, and they all say it tastes so much better, and they love being able to do that. So it'd be great if you guys could find ways to connect and do that in Wisconsin as well.
Thanks, Matt. We go to Sarah next. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is age-old comments that I've heard, actually more than I care to admit, there's nothing wrong with our environment. Why do we need to look for renewable energy? What is all this talk about going green? And I guess I'm just curious, what do you do or what do you point to say otherwise, to speak against this, that in fact there is issue and we need to start looking at this seriously?
I mean, I really feel like it's been pretty proven that we have some pretty daunting problems ahead of us. I mean, there's no question that global warming is happening and that humans are largely responsible for it. Yeah, we can maybe debate about some of the details, but, you know, I don't believe there's much of a debate there. I mean, there are studies that show that our rivers and streams are, you know, polluted with pesticides and even prescription drugs and all sorts, and cleaning products and all sorts of things. I mean, air pollution, I mean, 50% or something like that of the air that people breathe in this country is polluted beyond the EPA's requirements in some ways. I'm bungling that statistic. But, you know, I mean, these are all facts and figures that are out there. I mean, I'm not really faced with people doubting so much. I'm faced with people wondering if it can make a difference, not really knowing where to start, telling me that they don't have time. Those are the kinds of things that I'm hearing more of.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Tracy is next. Hi, Tracy.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm just calling. I love all the comments that are being made, but I think the thing that hits me home is I have a 3-year-old and a 5.5-year-old. And this past Sunday, we went for a walk. And I said, okay, boys, grab some bags. We're going to pick up the litter as we go. Because my boys know that you just don't litter. You don't do that. It's not earth-friendly. And they don't understand why people do that. And I said, grab some bags. And they're like, well, we'll just need one. I'm like, no, but you each take a bag, and Mama will take a bag for cans. So by the time we got back, we had two full bags of garbage. I live in a small little town, and I was surprised how much garbage we found just on our little walks. Or, you know, we would walk past a yard, and they'd be like, woo, 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 because that's what we do. We go, woo, 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 garbage, garbage. And it's fun for them. We just run, and we go get it. And I was even surprised how much garbage was just in people's yards that they just disregard. That there's newspapers in the plastic bags sitting in front of their yards. They come out once a week. They're those little bulletin ones. At one house, there was like seven of those. So we just put them on their porch.
And you know what? Like I have an 8-year-old son, and this drives him nuts, too. And he'll actually even notice people just dropping stuff on the street, things that I don't see, and he'll always comment on it. But what I think it really points to is, you know, your 3- and 5.5-year-olds and my 8- and 10-year-olds, these kids are learning, you know, from an early age that we do have to take care of our planet, and it's exciting. You know, that you're taking your kids out and you're picking up garbage and you're showing them that there's something they can do. My son is constantly, like, turning out lights in all the rooms, and just... It's great. I mean, these kids are going to have great values and be able to make a difference.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Sarah from Madison. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi.
I just was calling because I was just reading an article recently about the increasing numbers of toxins found in pets, like people who've been diagnosed with cancer. I know that there's a lot of things, like a lot of furniture have a lot of fire retardants that you know, us sitting on them, we wouldn't necessarily be exposed to, but animals who are living, you know, very closely to floors and couches and things like that.
Yeah, it accumulates in the dust is what they think is how people are getting exposed.
I'm sorry, what was that?
They think that people are getting exposed to flame retardants in the dust. They're finding it a lot in dust from electronics and from furniture. So vacuuming often with a HEPA filter, vacuum is one way to actually try and reduce some of that in your environment.
Do you recommend any cleaning products? Because, again, I mean, I think with things that we apply to our floors, like our dogs and cats and children, if we have them, are going to be much more exposed to them. I don't know if you know of any cleaning products off the top of your head that you recommend as far as things that are...
There are many, many, and I gave like a little bit of a little bit of guidelines. I use 7th Generation, and I use Ecover, and I actually know lots of people who clean their floors with vinegar and water and are quite happy. So there's many options. Just to sum up what I said before, look for products that have labels, have ingredients on the label. Look for products that make specific claims, and look for products that are certified by a third party.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Sarah. What did you say, 7th Generation? What was the second thing?
Yeah, I use 7th Generation, and I use Ecover, E-C-O-V-E-R.
Okay. And vinegar and water.
Vinegar and water sometimes.
Yeah. Tell me, how long a process it was for you? We only have about a minute left. How long was it a process for you to start changing? It was hard at first, I know, but then you started taking really small steps and then bigger steps, and you have to just sort of start somewhere, right?
You have to start somewhere. I started in 2002 when I first started writing articles about this, things would just hit me. It sort of my first thing was when I started changing my cleaning products, and also when I learned about plastic containers, and then my interest just grew from there. So since 2002, I've been making changes, and I still have many things to do.
Mm-hmm. And it is true that if we teach our children this pretty young, boy, are they on the lookout for everything. That generation is going to be way ahead of ours.
Because my kids are on me all the time.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Thank you ever so much for being with us, and happy Earth Day. Are you doing anything special to celebrate today other than probably a lot of talk shows?
I have a reading tonight. It was such a pleasure to be with you today. Thank you so much.
Yeah, our pleasure. Thank you. Lori Bongiorno, our guest, and the book is Green, Greener, Greenest, A Practical Guide to Making Eco-Smart Choices a Part of Your Life. It has just been published. It's in paperback and just filled with oodles of suggestions. decisions in all aspects of your life to make it greener. And just a reminder, actually this may be the first time you've heard it, Brian Fagan, Emeritus Professor of Anthropology at the University of California, Santa Barbara, author of The Great Warming, Climate Change and the Rise and Fall of Civilizations, will be our guest during this hour tomorrow. Today is the Pennsylvania primary. Tomorrow at 9 o'clock, we're happy to have Sander Van Oker. Many of you will remember him, a wonderful reporter. He will be joining us to give an analysis of the Pennsylvania primary. And the third reminder is tonight at 8 o'clock, special coverage of the Pennsylvania primaries with NPR's Robert Siegel and Melissa Block. It's a one-hour special covering all the results from all the counties in Pennsylvania and then looking ahead to North Carolina and Indiana 2 weeks from now. Then tomorrow, more analysis, 7 o'clock with Joy Cardine, and 9 o'clock with us and with Ben Marins at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. So pretty extensive coverage for those of us who love politics. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, John Treader for on-air production. This is the Ideas Network.